Welcome to Virginia Outdoor Adventures Podcast. We bring outdoor adventure stories and recommendations from athletes, conservationists, authors, park guides, community leaders, and local business owners from across the Commonwealth. I'm your host, Jessica Bowser. Shenandoah National Park has attracted wilderness explorers and waterfall chasers for generations. The park is best known for its outstanding mountain vistas, wildlife, and numerous waterfalls accessible along the famed Skyline Drive. Today's guest, Larry Brown, is a professional nature and wildlife photographer. He has captured Shenandoah in all of its glory through his gorgeous photographs of black bears, ridgeline sunrises, and starry night skies. Larry and I discuss his new book, Guide to Waterfalls of Shenandoah National Park, which includes some off-trail gems not found on any park maps. Listen as Larry describes how to plan your own waterfall adventure. Let's go. Larry, welcome to Virginia Outdoor Adventures.
Thank you for having me, Jessica. I appreciate the opportunity very much.
I am really excited to have you on the show today. First of all, I have been a huge fan of your work for years, and any of the listeners who have visited my social media pages have probably figured out that I'm also a photographer, but as a hobby. I do not have the skills that you have, Larry, but I do really appreciate and love photography, especially nature photography and wildlife photography. You and I are both really connected to the outdoors and love the outdoors, and I feel like photography is such a great hobby that complements it really well, because you can spend time outside and capture all of these amazing moments that you can keep for your lifetime. And so I'm really excited to talk about your photography, but also Shenandoah National Park is my absolute favorite place on earth. And I have a real connection to that park and have for many years. And so it's my happy place, and I'm sure it's your happy place too.
It has been my happy place for many years.
So what draws you to Shenandoah?
Well, first and foremost, I guess it's just to be in the great outdoors, specifically get out into the wilderness, escape from the daily grind and hustle and bustle all 12 months out of the year. Also, S&P, you know, makes that opportunity about doors readily available. You know, you got access provided by the Skyline Drive, which runs across the entire crest of the Blue Ridge Mountains there. And you've got all the trails within the park that can take you up and down on both sides of the mountains of the park. So it's like a endless abundance of adventures always awaiting, and will always be there.
It really is. And I'm just going to real quickly let the listeners know that we are talking about Shenandoah National Park. And the reason that I'm making that distinction is because a couple of episodes ago, we did an episode with Lynn Cameron, who talked about Shenandoah Mountain. And that was in the George Washington National Forest. And then also we have like Shenandoah River State Park. And then there's the Shenandoah Valley. So there's a lot of things in Virginia that have the name Shenandoah attached to them. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands that we are talking about Shenandoah National Park, which starts in Front Royal. And where does it end, Larry?
It ends right about at the onset of Waynesboro in that area, towards the Afton Mountain part of the interstate. But it connects immediately to the Blue Ridge Parkway as well on that end.
That's right. And Skyline Drive, as you mentioned, runs right through the middle of the park, and it is 101 miles?
Yes.
Yeah. And what is the history of Skyline Drive? Do you know? I'm pretty sure that when it was built, the idea was to build it along the ridgeline so that people could take in all of the amazing views.
Yes, I've built a lot of that information, packed a lot of that information into the SMP.guide website. And there's actually a lot about the history of the park and the creation of the Skyline Drive in that website.
What is the website if people want to find it?
It is SNP.guide.
All right. So let's dive into a little bit about photography. Shenandoah National Park is your photographic playground, without a doubt. I mean, when I go to your social media pages, I see amazing photos of landscape, of waterfalls, of the night sky, of wildlife. And you've been published in several publications, haven't you?
Yes, ma'am, I have.
What are some of the publications?
Virginia Tourism has published some of my photos and some of their brochures. Shenandoah National Park Trust, Virginia Wildlife Magazine, Old Dominion Outdoor Guide, which is no longer in circulation. Buckmaster's magazine and a high-end magazine called Endless Vacation.
Your photos in there are absolutely beautiful. I personally think that your photos are some of the best I've ever seen of Shenandoah. And there are a lot of people who photograph Shenandoah National Park. I just love what you produce. What got you interested in photography?
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, that's a long story. I can try to make it real short. I used to be an avid fisherman. I actually have this certification that's been hanging on my walls for a year that I'm a master angler one in Virginia. I have a few mounted fish in my home. I used to be a big fisherman, and I used to always take a week or two off in April of every year because that's when the fish spawn and the bigger females come, you know, inland to you know, lay eggs and stuff. And that's when you had your best chance at catching them. Well, this one year, it was just like rain, and everything was flooded. I couldn't get my canoe out on the lakes or the rivers. So I had a point and shoot camera. I've always loved photography, and I had a point and shoot camera. I would always take, you know, photos of things that I encountered or saw on my fishing trips. So I had a camera, and so I said, okay, I'm just going to spend this week up in the Shenandoah National Park. I'll see what it's all about and just do something different because, you know, I was on vacation. I wasn't going to sit around and do nothing. Mm-hmm. So I went up there, and I think the first place Big Meadows was the first place I stopped at. And I hiked up the Rapidan Road towards the woods, and I started seeing deer. So I started, you know, photographing them, and I just photographing flowers and all kinds of things. And as I got near the edge of the woods, I saw two bear cubs up in a tree, and that got my adrenaline going. And, you know, I tried to get a little bit closer to see if I could get a, you know, half decent photograph of them. And I was sitting there wondering, I wonder where Mama Bear is. And I got a couple shots, you know, and I started really getting curious about where Mama Bear is. And it's kind of like the old saying, can you see the forest for the trees? So I saw her, you know, about, I don't know, 30, 40 yards away. She was just kind of grazing on the forest floor, but she was keeping an eye on me. And, you know, she had no problem with me being there. I wasn't really being intrusive or causing any danger. So she was okay with it. I got a few more shots and I left. And from that moment on, I was hooked and I never looked back on fishing. I got dusty fishing equipment now and rods and reels out in the storage unit. I don't even go. I actually sold my canoe. I just got out of it, went to photography full time. Wow. Never looked back.
How much time do you actually spend in the park? Because when I look at your Facebook page, it seems like you're up there all the time, but also you're up there before anybody else is up there.
Yes, ma'am. I usually go in before sun up. I do my few hours or whatever I'm doing, and then I'm out of there before the majority of the people, you know, start rolling in. I go on an average during the green seasons, probably 3 to 4 times a week. And during the non-green seasons, once a week, maybe sometimes twice. But I'm there generally all 52 weeks of the year at some level, unless it's, you know, the Skyline Drive is locked. Sometimes I go in boundary, but a lot of times I don't do that. It's a really long haul when some of those boundaries I go in at.
I am super excited to talk about your book, which is Guide to Waterfalls of Shenandoah National Park, which was just recently released. And I got a chance to look at it, and it is beautiful. Not only the photography, but it is really cool to read about the different types of waterfalls and the different sections of the park and what it takes to access them. So let's talk about the book a little bit. First of all, what inspired you to write the book?
Mainly, I wanted to leave something behind, a legacy of sorts for like the current and the next generation of wilderness explorers and waterfall chasers like myself, which is not really a huge niche by any means. So, you know, I don't expect the book to ever make a bestsellers list anywhere. I knew that going into it. I basically just wanted to put something out there, and at the same time, it also provides me an extra spark motivation to continue chasing the park's waterfalls as long as I can to produce future editions of this book.
Well, I'm already looking forward to the future editions, but I'm in love with the first edition.
Well, thank you.
It almost seems to me like the book serves two purposes. First of all, it is a guide. So you do describe how to find these waterfalls, but then also it's just beautiful. I mean, you could put it out on a coffee table and leave it there as a display piece and look at it all the time, or have your guests look at it and just have it be a conversation piece and a showcase for the beauty that is Virginia.
Thank you. Actually, the second edition that should be out by the end of this summer, that will be the true coffee table type book. This first edition is a 6x9 paperback. It's small and easy to carry along in a backpack or a large coat pocket, ideal for hikers. The second edition is going to have a lot better paper print, which means better photographs. It's going to have a different layout where a lot of the horizontal photos will end up taking up two pages. So the second edition will definitely be more like a coffee table book, mainly because of quality, more pages, and a larger size. It'll be 8x11.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because I'm going to have to get both. Because like you said, I need the one to throw in my pack and I need the one to put in my home. So I'm definitely going to be purchasing both. Let's talk about how to use the book. Since it's a guide, how would you recommend that people use the book if they're interested in finding some of the waterfalls that you featured?
So the way that I wrote this book was basically geared for infrequent and new users to the park who may just be there for a week or a couple of days, never been there before, only been there, you know, once or twice, really not familiar with the park. So what I had done is create a location reference to the waterfalls, both trailed and off trail, from the perspective of where you were at along the Skyline Drive. So for instance, I'm referencing 36 waterfalls in this particular guide. Not all of them are trailed, but all of them have location directions from the trailheads that are located along Skyline Drive. That way people can see, you know, if it's something that they can do or want to do. Some of them are long ways, some of them are short tracks. Like say, for instance, like one of the trailed waterfalls, Dark Hollow Falls. That's probably one of the most popular because it's just right off the Skyline Drive and it's one of the shortest hikes there. As far as round trip, I think it's about a mile and a half total. You walk down and walk back out. Whereas, you know, there are some that you're going to have to traverse a long way down the mountain, which in turn means it's a long haul back up. Some people may not be physically fit or ready for an experience like that. So they can kind of like pick and choose from the book what's suitable for them or for a family, or if it just may be an adventurous couple out for the weekend. They can kind of gather from the book whether or not it's something that they're ready to do or want to do.
I'm looking at one of the pages out of your book right now. So you start with the district location. So what are the different districts? Is there north, central, and south?
Yes. And if you're coming in from Front Royal, it starts in the north district, which is mile zero. But you could be coming from another direction and the south could be your entry point, or the central could be your entry point.
Yeah, it's probably good to note that Shenandoah National Park has four entrances, or at least four entrances for cars. there are other ways to get into the park, but there are
that's
four
correct,
entrances.
Definitely.
So you've got it organized by north, central, and south. Actually, explain why you chose to list the waterway that is affiliated with the waterfall.
Well, that's just something I think is kind of common ground amongst all of the waterfall reference books that I've seen in my lifetime. I haven't done some things that some other reference books haven't done, like rate it from the difficulty and a couple other things. But I did want to include the waterway. It's kind of interesting in a way because you kind of know where a waterfall feeds from, which stream. Some could be a long ways off and some of them, you know, are just short of where a spring is coming out of the ground, like Lewis Spring Falls, for example. That's one that doesn't have a very long waterway until it gets beyond the base of the waterfall. Then it flows on down the mountain and into a county, which is called Hawksbill Creek.
Interesting. So you've got the district, you've got the waterway that feeds the waterfall, then you have the distance one way, and then followed by that are the directions where you actually spell out how to find this waterfall.
Yes, in short terms, there are a lot of websites and blogs, even printed material that can supply a person with maps and more detailed information. If a user is seeking that, I basically just give you the cut and dry way directions to get there.
So, what else would somebody need to know if they've got this guide in their hand and they're new to Shenandoah and they're not familiar with the park? What would you say that they need to have to make sure that they don't get lost? You know, some sort of an emergency going off trail that they can be found. Like, what would you suggest people do to take precaution?
If you're working on a trailed waterfall, you would probably not have any problems as long as you stay on the main trail. And generally, there's lots of other people on the trail, especially after the first part of the morning has passed. If you're looking to do the off-trail waterfalls, which I like to do a lot, you definitely need some type of handheld GPS device for several reasons. One, you can punch in the coordinates that I've included with the waterfalls, and you can pretty much follow your location, towards those coordinates. This can also help you retrace your steps back out until you hit a main trail again. One of the other things that a lot of people don't realize, and I've seen this a lot through the years, they think because it's a national park that it's just like a recreation parks and department park, which is so far from the truth. I don't know how to explain it, but I've seen a way people act around wildlife and everything, and they just expect it's a tame situation, and it's not like that at all. There's also been a lot of problems in the park last year with increased visitors due to the COVID situation. There were many helicopters called in to bring people out, and there was actually one person that died at White Oak Canyon falling from the rocks. A couple had to be airlifted out of Dark Hollow Falls. But the one thing people really need to understand is that it is a wilderness, and there are things that can and will cause harm if you're not alert. There's poisonous snakes there, copperheads and rattlers. It's poison oak, poison ivy, ticks is a big problem. And of course, there's bears, and not all bears are bad. But some bears have an attitude, and if it's mating season, which is June and July, a male definitely has an attitude, whether you're messing with him or not.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point. There are people who just don't seem to understand or be aware of the dangers that are out there. And I'll share this crazy story with you about, and it's related to waterfalls too, but this past summer, I decided to hike down to Dark Hollow Falls. And I had not been down there in years. And the whole reason that I have not been down there in years is because, like you said, it's a very short hike, although it is steep, and it's very easily accessible. It's so close to Big Meadows. Because it's so easy to access, there are people everywhere all the time. And for me personally, it kind of takes the joy out of experiencing something so beautiful when there are tourists crawling all over the place around you. So I had not been there in a very long time, but I decided I was going to go because I was staying at Big Meadows. So I got up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and I was at the trailhead as the sun came up. I was the only person there. It's the first time I've ever seen that parking lot completely empty. And I hiked down and was able to enjoy a really beautiful hike down by myself. I had maybe 20 minutes at the bottom of the falls before other people started to show up, but they didn't stay very long. And I hung up my hammock at the bottom of the waterfall and decided to take a nap because I had been getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning 3 days in a row to see the sunrise. So I was exhausted and I laid down and I was out so quick. And maybe 40 minutes later, I woke up to the sound of voices. And when I opened my eyes, there were people absolutely everywhere. I mean, they were on every boulder, literally hanging from trees over the cliff. And people are like in their flip-flops and they've got their dogs and and this is all during COVID. People aren't exactly like, social distancing, and it's difficult to do
to social distance sometimes too. So I'm laying in my hammock and I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here. Well, this woman starts coming towards me in flip-flops, and you know, that area is so, I guess, worn down from all of the people who are always walking there. So the ground itself is pretty, you know, compact. And when it's wet, which it can be because it's the bottom of a waterfall, it's moist and it's slippery. Well, she started sliding towards me and my hammock. She falls into my hammock.
Oh, no.
I know. Falls into my hammock, goes, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm looking at her like, I can't believe this is happening. And then she turns around and says to me, is this spot for rent?
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, I'm sorry, what? And she's like, this spot here, did you rent this? And I had no words. I couldn't even think of something to say I was just so stunned. But I mean, like you said, that is the nature of a lot of these tourists who are new to the park and possibly even new to the outdoors. They're unprepared. They haven't prepared properly. They're unaware of the dangers. And so, you know, it's really good for us to talk about what you know, how to be prepared and what you need to do. But also that kind of brings me back to why I like this book so much, because you have included waterfalls that are off the beaten path. So if you want to go on a little adventure of your own, you can do that and not have the type of experience that I had at Dark Hollow Falls.
Correct. And now you know why I'm in there before daylight and leave a few hours shortly after daylight.
Yes, that's exactly right. So are there any particular waterfalls that you would like to highlight from your book? I would love to share all 36, but we don't have that kind of time.
Right,
so
right.
Are there maybe a couple of them that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, there's two that stands out very well in my mind all the time. And actually, they're the ones that made the front cover and the back cover. On the front cover is what is called Dry Run Falls. Dry Run Falls is an off-trail waterfall. It's located not too far from the South River Overlook. You just have to take the Dry Run Fire Road for a couple miles, and which is not a very well-maintained fire road. I don't know that they expect it to be a fire road much longer, because they've letting it grow up and trees have fallen over. So there's no way a vehicle can get through there unless they have chainsaws to cut the trees up. The unique thing about this waterfall is that it's in very steep territory, and in the green season, the undergrowth is really, really thick. It's not much of a bushwhack once you leave the main trail. I would say maybe an eighth of a mile, maybe more, but it's an eighth of a mile straight down. What I remember most about this is the first two times that I went looking for it. The first time I came out at the middle of the waterfall, and from there, it was a straight drop back down to even get to the base of the waterfalls. So that was a challenge in itself. So I decided to go back up and walk a little bit more ways down the fire road and then drop off the mountain again, the ridge. And that time I had come out well way down below the base of the fall. So I was able to walk the creek back up to find the base of the falls. The second time, my GPS quit working. So I kind of guessed where I needed to go off. This time I came off at the top of the waterfall. So needless to say, I crossed the creek and I just went down from there. But it's a very beautiful area, and it's nice to see something that few people have ever seen, have ever ventured to. I'm sure there are many of them like this in the park. And that's what I do in the winter months. I look for waterfalls on PATC maps, and I'll look around on the internet, see if anybody's been to them. Sometimes I get lucky and I see a picture or something that somebody took with a phone or something, and it's like, I don't really want to go. That's just a little one. But there's some that get my attention, and you know, I have two I want to go to this year before the green season starts here in a couple months. It never gets really green up there till like mid-May. First week of May, you start seeing, you know, the first signs of greenery appearing, but you don't really get that full spring green effect until about mid-May throughout the park from, you know, top to bottom.
You mentioned PATC maps. That's Potomac Appalachian Trail Club.
That's correct.
Where can people find those maps? I think they're available on their website, right?
They are available on their website, and some of the little stores throughout S&P carry some of those as well. The gift shops, you know, like the Big Meadows Visitor Center has them. And I believe the lodge stores may have them as well. Skyland, both Skyland and Big Meadows.
Mm-hmm. Those are more detailed than the actual park maps.
Yes, and you can get them in districts too. Like I have all three district maps.
What's the GPS tracker that you use? Is that something that you would recommend?
Well, I have a Garmin eTrax 10, but you know, really, if you have Google Maps app installed, it works similarly and can do the job. I mean, you can pull up Google Maps and you can input coordinates. When you hit your location, you basically just take the pin and you move it around on the map until you know where you're at. And if you stick that pin there, it'll draw you the distance in the line to your coordinates. Now, that's if you have a good signal for a phone use. Now, most of these handheld GPS devices, they can pick up signals really well. And a lot of them have preloaded maps already in them. I mean, you can spend anywhere from $25 to $300 to $400 for a GPS device. One I have only costs $100. It serves a purpose for me.
Another thing that I use is the Gaia GPS system, which works really well because when you're up in the mountains, you don't have cell service.
Correct.
But yeah, but with the satellite imaging, it usually works pretty good. It's a lifeline, right? And you need to know not only where you are, but you need to be able to tell people where you are if you need help getting out.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So back to Dry Run Falls, you know, the photos that I'm looking at here are pretty spectacular. Do you have any idea how tall some of these waterfalls are? Like, how would you measure how tall they are?
It would be a guesstimate.
Yeah.
To me, the Dry Run Falls that's in the book is probably slightly larger than Dark Hollow, but because of the grade of it and because of how it's positioned, you could only get a bird's eye view of it from it, like if you were in a drone or a plane. I mean, you could kind of see it all from the base, but you have to crawl around to get on at different levels to kind of see all of that. So it's like I could go there and shoot all the time because I can always find a different angle, a different way to perspective to shoot it. I mean, it's just that unique because of the way it's graded. It's very cool.
It is very cool. And, you know, I'll just point out that not all waterfalls are the same. Not even close. And as you flip through the photos in your book, you can see the differences. Some of them cascade, some of them are just one huge drop, like they're long and they're tall and skinny, and then some of them are short and wide.
Yes, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the park's tallest waterfall overall run, which is 93 feet. It just basically a drop over a sheer cliff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first time I saw it, I was like, I wasn't really impressed. And second time I was there, I actually went off trail, and that's how I found, you know, three waterfalls above it. That's actually more impressive to me. But about the fourth time I went there, I decided, okay, I'm going to bushwhack to the bottom. The view's got to be better than looking at it as a long, tall, skinny, you know, stream jumping over a cliff. And sure enough, it was. It was awesome looking at it from the bottom. And the other one that I mentioned, Big Creek Falls, that is a very secluded waterfall and another one that very few have seen, and probably very few people see it every year. It is well off the beaten path. Actually, I had seen a picture or two of it that people had went to it in the winter. A lot of people do bushwhacking in the winter because they don't like the snakes and the ticks and all that. And yeah, that's cool. But I'm into the photography. I don't like the grays and dull colors of winter. I like that vibrant spring greenery and everything. So me and my friend, we were looking at on the map one day, and we decided the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So we parked at the point overlook and we climbed over the rock wall and we just dropped straight off the mountain.
Wow.
We found the creek and we went the creek upstream and we finally found it. And
you two are brave.
It was beautiful. I mean, because it had just rained like the day before, a big rain. I mean, we're talking a couple inches. So it was really busting with water. And there was another one just upstream, you know, from it, but nothing was impressive as the main falls. It's like stair step case waterfalls, you know, it just, and it's so wide and it's so tall. I mean, I really, you should have somebody in the picture for scale. The one of me on the back cover, it doesn't really do that scale justice because I'm a ways back from the waterfalls. If I were to be standing at the base of that waterfall, I would look like a little guy.
Well, the photo that I'm looking at of Big Creek Falls, I guess this is the lower main falls because there's actually two parts. You've got two completely different photos in here, which again, yes. It's, you know, that just goes to show how completely different one waterfall can be from another, because in the top photo, it looks wide. It almost looks short and wide, but you can tell that there's a lot more water coming down on one side, and then the other side looks like little steps all along.
Yes.
The way I'm doing a very poor job of describing it. Maybe that's
no,
okay.
That's correct.
People need to actually look at your photos because they're so incredible. Don't listen to me. Like, get your book and look.
You did it right. We call that the staircase effect. When you see that, you know, the water dripping like it is, it comes out a little bit more, ripple. Not a whole lot of waterfalls like that in the park. I've seen a lot of those in West Virginia, but not a whole lot in Shenandoah Park.
I agree. I have not seen as many either. And you know, as a photographer, of course, you use a slower shutter speed to get the blur effect as the water is moving. Mm-hmm. And it just creates such a beautiful
silky effect. Yes.
Yeah. That it's absolutely gorgeous. So this particular one I think is beautiful, but it is completely different from the other photo that you have of the upper falls, the Big Creek Falls upper section, which almost looks like a gorge. It's these huge boulders. And then there's a little section in the middle of the boulders where the water is pouring over.
Correct.
Yeah. Completely different, but also equally as cool.
Yes. And like I said, it's well off the beaten path and very secluded. It's just something that not a lot of people have seen or will see each year. It requires a lot of effort. But for those of us with the adventure spirit, that's what we live for.
That's right. Do you recommend any of these waterfalls for swimming?
I've seen a lot of people swim in the White Oak Canyon and the Cedar Run Canyon,
yeah.
Mainly because a lot of those have really deep pools. Also, there's one on Cedar Run that people actually get at the top of and slide down the waterfall to the pool. It's really smooth rock, actually from the top to the bottom. So it's like a natural slide. And if you look on YouTube, you'll find videos of a lot of teenagers in the summer that go there and do that. And they have their GoPros and some of them attach it to their head and film themselves going all the way down and going under the water. And,
it's
like this natural slide at a water park. And, you know, if the water's good and there's good, flow and pressure, it's just like, they just slide down, you know, like you would one of those tube slides at a water park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. White Oak Canyon seems to be really popular for that. What I've noticed though, is that the water, even in the middle of July, is cold.
Yes.
I sometimes wonder how people can tolerate it for so long. I mean, even when it's incredibly hot and humid, sometimes I just put my feet in the water and they're numb within a couple of minutes.
Yes, it stays cold. It definitely. I've had to get out into the water many times to capture shots. Lower Doyles is a perfect example of that. Because there's so many obstacles in the way, or you're going to have tree branches, obstructing your composition, what's in the water, it's in the frame. So I've had to get in the water many times, waist deep or more when it's that cold, and get my tripod set up on some steady rocks and take my shots.
Yeah. Have you had any crazy mishaps while you've been out photographing?
I have. And I look around, make sure nobody saw me, and they didn't. But no, I did have one at Jones Run in 2018. That was the year of HTO I mean, that year it rained all year long, if you remember correctly, all mm-hmm. the way up into November. From March to November, all it did was rain. I made a bad decision one morning crossing the creek near Jones Run, and I left my camera on my tripod while I made the crossing, and I slipped, and the camera hit the ground, and I had to send it off to get it repaired. And that was a couple weeks and a few hundred dollars later before I got back out there.
And you're lucky, but it was only a few hundred dollars.
Yes. So I've learned, dismantle everything, put it in your backpack before you cross any creek, even if you can just rock hop it, you know.
Yeah.
You just never know.
Is there a time of the year that is best to go exploring these waterfalls? I mean, you mentioned rain in the spring. You mentioned greenery,
yes.
Like what, but also you have to consider bushwhacking and ticks and things in the summer. So what do you think is the best time for people to go?
Well, as a photographer, my choice is green seasons, because you have much more supporting scenery other than, you know, trees with no leaves and the greatness of winter. But on the other hand, if you're not a photographer and you just want to go see, and you have problems, you know, wanting to avoid snakes, ticks, the poison oak, poison ivy, winter is the best time to go exploring. Which either way you choose, it's always best to go after a good rainfall, because I've known people that have taken some of these tracks and it's been during low water and they come out of there with pictures of trickles coming over rocks. Not worth all the effort, in my opinion. But if you're just there for the adventure, then you know, maybe it is worth the effort. But as a photographer, to me, it's not. There's got to be something to come back with.
Yeah.
That's why I choose the green seasons or the fall season. Unfortunately, we never seem to have much rainfall during the autumn season. Maybe one of these years that'll change.
That explains why I don't see a lot of fall foliage in your photos.
Correct. That is very correct. Yes.
Okay. So how can people buy the book? The first edition is out now. Where can people find it?
It is only available online. It is at Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. I think there are a couple booksellers as well on eBay that carry it.
So would somebody just search for a guide to waterfalls of Shenandoah National Park?
Yes. They could do that as easily in a search engine such as Google. And you may even find a couple other, you know, mom and pop shops that's selling it as well.
Wonderful. And when do you expect the second edition out?
I'm expecting a summer release, probably like a later summer release, like August. It's probably when it's going to happen.
Okay. Well, when that happens, I will be sure to put that up on the podcast social media pages so that people who are following will know when it's available.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So what else do you photograph? I mean, these waterfalls are gorgeous, but you have such a repertoire and a wonderful collection of photos of the park. What are some of the other favorite things to photograph?
Wildlife is been a big thing for me through most of my years of photographing at Shenandoah. I've started out with deer, mostly whitetail bucks during the rutting season. That really got my attention. I like photographing them every year. I look forward to November every year for those 2-3 weeks that activity occurs. Black bears have definitely been a big influence in what I do photography wise most of the year. Although last year I didn't do a whole lot because I was trying to wrap up the waterfall book and get some other things done. So hopefully I can return to black bear photography this spring.
What I have learned from talking to you is that you do not just randomly go out there and hope that you're going to come across deer or hope that you're going to come across bear. You've spent so many years in the park photographing these animals that you have a pretty good idea of where and when to find them.
Yes, that's a very good observation. It takes a few years to learn the habits and the feeding habits of animals. But once you start to learn those things are seasonal, which plants and or which nuts or whatever, when they come into season, berries as well, you can pretty much locate animals based on that, because that's basically what they do, especially bears. I mean, they live to eat, and that's really what they do. They live to eat. And if you ever seen them go into their fattening phase starting in generally late September when the green acorns come on the trees, I mean, they literally just blow up with weight until they're ready to go den. And it's amazing because even the little tiny cubs of the year, they just look like these little butterballs, but you know, by the end of October. I mean, it's amazing to watch them gain all that weight.
So cute. If you've ever followed a family of bears?
There was one year that I kept up with a sow and her two cubs pretty much from spring until November that year. And then I was fortunate enough the next year, it was late spring. I was hoping to see them again. And, you know, the emergence, which generally occurs in late March or April, but I didn't see them again until May. And that was the only time I ever saw them all three together again. But that was a pretty cool experience.
That sounds awesome. I mean, anytime you come across bears is an amazing experience. What should people keep in mind if they come across bears in Shenandoah?
Black bears are not like grizzlies in the way that black bears are really truly timid creatures. But if you put their backs to the wall, then they can become aggressive. So always give them their space, always respect their space. They will let you know also if you invade their space, a lot of them will bluff charge. A lot of times they'll just kind of like huff and snort at you. But if that doesn't get your attention, then a bluff charge will. I've had that happen once.
Really?
when I was a newbie. Yes. And oh boy, did that make the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
How bad.
But she pulled up just like the books and everything you read says, you know, she's just trying to drive you away, let you know that, hey, you're in my space.
So if somebody wanted to see black bears, do you have any advice on how to find them? I mean, for me, when I'm out there hiking, I just feel like I'm lucky if I come across one. And I'd say the number of times that I come across it is usually 50-50. I mean, it's a pretty common occurrence to run into bears. But if I wanted to find bears, I don't necessarily have a specific trail or specific place that I would go to looking for them. What would you tell somebody who wanted to see bears?
You know, that's a tricky question because it's like I say, bears' feeding habits are patternable and it's all due to seasons. It all depends on what's in bloom and, you know, what's coming to be of crop. So unless you know certain areas and ridges, you know, it's like hunt and peck. But for people that a lot of people ask me, you know, and when I'm sitting down to eat or something or at a wayside, you know, people, you know, start talking, they'd like to know where they can see some bear. Really the best advice I have is just drive the roads early in the mornings and late in the evenings. A lot of the parks bears are nocturnal, and they start moving in the late evening and you can catch them alongside the road. Or if you just look deep up into the woods as you're driving along, if you're not driving 50 miles an hour, you know, you can look up into the woods and generally you'll have luck doing that. Mornings are another good time. They're getting ready to wind down for the day. And, you know, a lot of times the food sources are along the roads and they tend not to go near them. Most bears tend not to go towards them, you know, during the daylight hours. But as far as trying to, you know, tell you to where to go in the actual mountains, what trails or whatever, you know, it would depend on the time of year. Exactly. And if that area even holds a general population of bears to begin with. It's amazing. There are some areas in the park that I've seen that's just non-existent of bears. It's mainly because, you know, the food source is not there. And then there are some places the food source is only there in the fall when the nuts are coming on the trees. And that's the only time those bears will go into those areas.
So how would you say that photographing the park has impacted you?
It's made me a better photographer. It's given me a better understanding and knowledge of nature. It gives you a sense of accomplishment to be able to see places and go to places that most people don't, that where few have ever ventured. One of the most positive impacts is probably being picked up by somebody on social media. Like, for instance, in 2010, I got an email from a lady over in the UK that worked for a film company that was contracting with the Discovery Channel. She had seen us, my black bear photos, and they were getting ready to film a new series. And it was, at that time, it was called North America. And she wanted to know if I could get them on to bears emerging from their dens in the spring. Hopefully, you know, a sow with cubs. I said, sure, I could do that. It's not a guarantee, but we can try. So they issued me a contract and they paid me four figures, and I took a week off work and guided them through the mountains. And first 3 days was looking really iffy. Then the fourth morning, we spotted some bears up in the trees way up on a ridge. First, all we could see was the black in the bare trees. We wasn't really sure what it was till we, you know, looked at it through binoculars. Mm-hmm. But what bears do in the spring when they first come out of the den, they kind of like get up in trees and just hang around for a couple of days until they get all their senses back together and everything. It's really weird. You may notice, I don't know if you look at the visitor logs in the visitor centers, they have these log books where people can write down, you know, their wildlife sightings and stuff. Generally in the month of April, you can look at those logs and see where people see bears up in trees, you know, all along the Skyline Drive, all three districts every April. It's a shoe-in. It's a guarantee you're going to see that because that's what they do. But anyway, they got some really great footage. It was a sow with only one cub. The other bear that was in a tree was a yearling. We feel that was probably the daughter of the sow from the previous year. Sows will generally allow their daughters to remain in the home area, and they run the male bears off, but females are allowed to stay in the same area. They got some great footage of the cub and the sow, and it was included in the 7-part series titled North America. They came back again in the spring, gave me another contract. They were looking film predatory stuff like, you know, it's no secret that when the fawns are born in the spring of the year, which is generally late May, the 1st of June, you know, they are easy bait for coyotes and bears. And they were hoping to get some footage of that. Got one real close one morning. The coyote was really close to the fawn, but the wind was blowing so hard, the coyote just couldn't tell where that fawn was. And when the coyote left the meadow, the mother went and got that fawn up, and they went the other direction.
Aww. Happy ending, though.
Yes, and there was a bear one evening in the meadow. It was really quick. He knew there was a fawn out in that little, do you know where that little clump of gray dogwoods is down at northern end of the meadow?
There was
a fawn bedded in there, and a bear knew it. And we were sitting up there at the roadway, you know, just talking, planning out our evening, what we were going to do in the evening. And here come this bear running out of them woods. He went straight to them gray dogwoods, picked that fawn out, and ran with it back into the woods. And we was just too far away, and there's nothing they could do to film that.
Oh.
And that's what they had really come for, you know, hoping to find, you know, that action. But they still got a lot of, you know, good footage of fawns and turkeys and coyote. And that day, that morning that the coyote was trying to find the fawn, all of that was included in that 7-part series.
Wow, what an amazing experience. I've never seen anything like that. So just to be able to see it, even if they didn't get the footage, I would think just to be able to experience something like that is incredible. Larry, where can listeners connect with you? Do you have social media pages you'd like to share?
My main website is larrywbrown.com. I have links to all my social media sites on that as well. And links to some of the photo albums that I have out on Flickr. My newest posts and stuff are always on Twitter and Facebook.
Let's move on to the closing. These are questions that I ask every guest. So Larry, what is one piece of gear you can't live without?
Oh, you really have to ask that, huh?
I have a feeling. I know.
Without a doubt. No camera, no Larry.
That's right.
No doubt.
What kind of camera are you using?
I am shooting Nikon now. I have a D850. I was a Canon shooter for many years. And in 2018, I made the jump to Nikon. And I don't regret doing that. It took me a while because it's like night and day, the controls and everything. But now I have a good handle on the Nikon elements and all its features and controls.
So what is your next big Virginia outdoor adventure?
I actually have some off trail falls that I'm eyeing up to take care of this month. One I have seen a picture of, and only one picture, so I know not many people go there. It's called Climbing Rose Falls. And there are actually two branches of Naked Creek. I have explored on the east branch mostly, but I've never been over the west branch. I'm not really sure, you know, quite yet how to access it from the overlook, but I'm sure, you know, just walk, eventually you'll run into the stream. And when in doubt, just keep walking till you run into the stream, right? So I want to explore the west branch of the Naked Creek. I want to find the Climbing Rose Falls. And I also hear that there is another large waterfall on Dry Run down near the boundary line. So, yeah, I have three things that I would like to take care of this month. So I know where to go when it's green and I can find my way there.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
That's why I like to really look for them at this time of year. I kind of then have a general idea, and I can set GPS coordinates and easily find my way in the green season, because things really look different in the woods between winter and green seasons. I mean, everything's just so wide open in the winter, and you come back when all the leaves and the undergrowth brushes on the forest floor. It's totally different looking.
Larry, thank you so much for being a guest on Virginia Outdoor Adventures. I'm super excited about your book. I am excited about planning some bushwhacking waterfall adventures, and I can't wait to get out there using your guide.
Thanks very much, Jessica. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to be on here this evening.
Absolutely. Adventure on.
If you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us. Rate, review, and share with a friend. Follow us on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you may listen to podcasts. Virginia Outdoor Adventures is hosted by me, Jessica Bowser. Cover art illustrated by Olivia Smith. Editing by Alexander Valencia. Executive production by Steph Garrett. We love to hear from our listeners. Contact us on our website, virginiaoutdooradventures.com. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, adventure on.